Coming up, we're going to talk about the Diamondbacks' series win over the LA Dodgers, their first series win of the season, I might add, with the man himself, Vince Samperio of Locked On Dodgers, all for you next.
You are Locked On Diamondbacks, your daily Arizona Diamondbacks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Miller Thomas of Locked On Diamondbacks still here. I'm a multimedia journalist and I'm a graphic designer, so please go check out my website, millerthomas24.myportfolio.com. On there you can see all my latest work, from my packages to my articles to my photos and my graphic design. If you want to see more content by me, just follow me on Twitter, at creatorthomas24 for my personal account, or look up Locked On Diamondbacks on both Twitter and Instagram for the podcast handle. And of course, thank you for making Locked On Diamondbacks your first listen every day. I would not be able to do this podcast without you, my loyal listeners, sharing, subscribing, reviewing, doing all that so I could do this podcast for you. Thank you. It's free and available on all platforms, so please continue to tell your friends. And today's episode is brought to you by Blue Nile. This Mother's Day, give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On Sports listeners get $50 off a $500 order. Just use code Locked On at checkout. And one man who hopes his team gets another ring this fall is Vince Samperio of Locked On Dodgers. But if you want to win a ring this fall, you probably got to start with beating the D-backs, because I got my Coyote shirt on. They had a crazy comeback win, down 3 goals in the third. They came back. The D-backs had a great win, not just today, also yesterday. You know, it's the first time the D-backs have back-to-back wins against the Dodgers since August 2019, Vince. It's been a minute since we've seen this.
Yeah, you mentioned first series win for the D-backs for the year. First series win against the Dodgers since 2019, which is a span of at least like a dozen series probably. So, yeah, obviously not great for the Dodgers. They've now lost 2 of 3 to the Rockies. They lost 2 of 3 to the D-backs. And that's been the main blemish on the season so far. So I'm not excited to get into it, but I'm excited to be here talking to you. And at least I can have some, you know, share the sorrows.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah, I was looking at the MLB Network ticker. It said like the Dodgers were 1-8 or something against NL West teams this season, and then like 10-1 or something versus everyone else. They're basically an elite team versus everyone else outside the NL West and suck against in division rivals. So it's interesting that, you know, that's been the case. It could just be, you know, you kind of got to throw out records when you play, you know, in division teams. And that's basically across sports, basketball, football. Those teams just know you better. They know your X's and O's better. Like, you play them, we're going to play you guys, you know, how many X times this season. So it's not a surprise that sometimes when you have these two teams, you know, one's better than the other, when they're in the same division, it really doesn't matter. So let's get into today's game, because I think the story of this entire series has been the defense. You know, the D-backs, phenomenal defense, and then the Dodgers, not so phenomenal defense, because I think the game really swung today for the D-backs in that eighth inning when you have Dalton Varsho. He starts it off with a walk, and then Sergio Alcantara, who's basically been a non-factor for the D-backs at the plate this season, he just gets a little bunt down. Max Muncy picks it up and just overthrows the first baseman, and it ends up scoring two for the D-backs, or I think it just ends up scoring one in that moment with Dalton Varsho. And it's like another instance where the Dodgers defense just kind of hurts them and blows this game for them ultimately.
Yeah, we saw 2 runs score in the game before. We saw the run score yesterday, and it ended up leading, you know, to an extra run as well, so putting the Dodgers down, you know, more than just one after that. So, yeah, I mean, Max Muncy, it's been interesting with the DH, how they've been handling it. They've been putting Justin Turner at DH a little bit more often. Max Muncy's been getting some time at third base, and he hasn't necessarily shown that he's been a good third baseman in the past. He did show himself to be a pretty decent, pretty strong second baseman, turned himself into a really good first baseman last year. But now he's back to playing mostly second and third base. And at third base, I haven't felt comfortable with him, and he hadn't really done anything yet. But until yesterday, he overthrew it. Freddie Freeman over there, he's not the best first baseman either, from what I've been noticing. There's been a few times where maybe I'm used to Max Muncy or other guys there. There's a couple of times he hasn't picked when I thought he would been able to pick. And then on that one yesterday, I think he tried too hard to stay on the bag. I think if he would have just, you know, came off. But also Muncy fired it from close range, and it was over his head. So I can't fault him too much. It was a bad throw at the end of the day. But yeah, it's It's so hard to win games when you're giving runs away.
So would you reorder like the defensive positioning then? Maybe Freeman DH, Turner third, and then Muncy at first or something like that?
Nah, I mean, Justin Turner's also not that great at third base anymore.
He's old.
Yeah, he's lost a step over there the last few years.
Yeah.
I don't think I would move anything around. I just think, you know, with Max Muncy, you know that that's going to happen sometimes. Usually you can say, okay, well, we'll take that because he's going to get you more runs on the offensive side. But he's been struggling a little bit so far this year to get the bat going. But, you know, coming off injury and everything else, I think hopefully he'll settle in after a few more weeks.
Yeah, Muncy really didn't get any breaks in that eighth inning because after that little bunt, then you had Cooper Hummel with just that little dribbler down the line, and Muncy was like, let me see if it goes foul, and it just stays perfectly fair the whole time. I mean, that was just some really unfortunate luck by Max Muncy in that situation. But after that, I mean, we had another almost Gavin Lux giving up a run because it was just the most routine of plays, and he like triple pumps it before he throws it over to first base. Like, we were talking off the pod, like, this is something that you've seen before with Gavin Lux, because admittedly, I haven't watched a lot of Gavin Lux tape, and he looked really bad defensively this series.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen it as much at the major league level, but he also hasn't played too much at the major league level yet for that to happen. He was, you know, naturally a shortstop. Now he's playing second base. He had, you know, seemingly a case of the yips before in the minor leagues, made a bunch of throwing errors in a small time span. Has had throwing issues before. It hadn't seemed to have plagued him so far in the regular season. He actually had it in the spring training a little bit. His throws were off. And even the one he threw away that Freeman ended up kind of saving by stepping on the bag in time. The play before that was also hit to him, and he also almost pulled Freeman off the bag. Freeman had to go to his stomach after he caught the ball. So, yeah, it's one of those where it just seems like they come in these bunches, and hopefully that he gets over it. But when you're an infielder and you're pumping the ball three times, clearly it's a little bit in your head. So,
and it feels like you would feel better if he actually just got rockets hit to him instead of these little dribblers, because every time it's a dribbler, you could just see him thinking over there at second base. He's like you said, he's pumping it three times. He's like, what? How do I want to throw this? Should I do sidearm? Should I do overhand? So I don't know what's up with Gavin Lux, but he was definitely overthinking in this series. But I think my second biggest takeaway from this series has to be like the starting pitching, because they were really great today. I mean, Zach Allen on the D-backs, this was his third start of the season. And entering the game, he had a 2.88 ERA against the Dodgers, and that dropped today. I mean, he had a fantastic start, 6 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs. But on the other side, the Dodgers starter, he gave up half the hits that Zach Allen gave up. He only gave up one hit in this game, but that one hit he gave up was a big home run to Nick Ahmed, probably the least likely guy to hit a home run on this D-back squad. I mean, what did you think about it when you saw the D-backs take that 1-0 lead?
Yeah, the Dodgers' yearly contribution to Nick Ahmed's home run count continues. He always seems to get at least a couple every year off the Dodgers, mostly in inopportune times for the Dodgers, opportune times for the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, obviously annoying. You know, he hung a pitch up there and Ahmed hit it out. But, yeah, I mean, to that point, he had no-hitter going into the fifth inning, gave up that one hit. That's all he ended up giving up. And then even in that eighth inning, like we just talked about, not one ball left the infield, but the Diamondbacks ended up with 2 runs and almost had 3 runs if Freddie Freeman had to have his foot down. So, you know, for both sides, the Dodgers had a stretch where they didn't score since the first inning of the game on Tuesday until, what, the eighth inning of the game on Wednesday when Trey Turner drove in Mookie Betts. So clearly, you know, they were having issues with whoever the Diamondbacks were throwing up there on Tuesday's game, which we'll talk about a little bit in a little bit. You know, it was a lot of bad luck in double plays, whereas Wednesday's game, you know, Zach Gallen is one of those guys that seems to have the Dodgers number. There's guys pretty much on every, you know, National League West team that kind of has their number, and Zach Gallen's been that guy ever since he came over.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Dodgers thought with that loaded lineup, maybe after Gallen comes out the game, maybe you could attack that bullpen. And they were getting after Ian Kennedy. I mean, they did in last night's game, which, like you said, we'll talk about later. And unfortunately, that Brent Strom pep talk for Ian Kennedy came after he already gave up the damage, so it wasn't really as effective. But the D-backs bullpen was really special in this series, and they were able to hold the Dodgers down. So were you actually like maybe surprised? Because, you know, historically, if you look at the last 3 or 4 years, the D-backs have had one of the worst bullpens in baseball. And so far this season, their bullpen has been really good. And against this Dodgers team, like, these were tie games for like 4 or 5 innings the last 2 days. And the D-backs bullpen was able to stand up against this loaded Dodgers lineup.
Yeah, I mean, definitely surprised. We've seen the Dodgers get to a lot of bullpen so far this year, not just this year, but in years past, you know, especially the D-backs bullpen. But, you know, I think with Zach Davies, right? That's the name? They're the one.
Yeah.
Davies is a guy that's held the Dodgers down before, even though as much as that means anything. You know, Zach Gallen's the same way. And then Mark Melancon is somehow the Dodger whisper down there in the ninth inning. You know, he's never blown a save against the Dodgers in his career, and now he's been on three NOS teams. So it did surprise me the other ways, but it's also, I'm assuming a lot of these guys, other than Mansupply, I don't remember too many of the names that came out to face the Dodgers. So maybe it's just a matter of getting adjusted to some new arms that they haven't faced.
No, that's fair, because a lot of these D-backs relievers, they literally just picked up off the scrap heaps in the last year. Like Mansupply and Kyle Nelson, like these are their best relievers, and these guys are literally just picked up off the waiver wire. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that you're not familiar with these guys. These are not household names that the D-backs are throwing out there. So don't fret on that at all. But, yeah, the bullpen for the D-backs really held up. The Dodgers bullpen was pretty good as well. But, of course, Daniel Hudson gave up the run today, and Brewster Graterol gave up the run yesterday, because we're going to talk about that game in segment number two. But if the Dodgers want to add some jewelry this fall, I think the best place to do it is not the World Series, because I don't think they're winning the World Series this year. I think the best place that the Dodgers could get some fine jewelry is BlueNile.com, because whether she prefers a statement piece or everyday subtle elegance, BlueNile.com has fine jewelry options for every mom. Shop high-quality classic diamond rings, elegant tennis bracelets, or gemstone pendant necklaces. Looking for fine jewelry but having trouble choosing? Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7, available via phone or chat to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. This Mother's Day, give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On listeners get $50 off a $500 order. This podcast exclusive is only good through Mother's Day. Use code Locked On. That's code Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever peace. Go to BlueNile.com today. All right, all right, all right. We're here with Vince Samperio of Locked On Dodgers, and we're going to be breaking down game two now, because the D-backs got a great win in the third game of the series that we just talked about. A clutch Nick Ahmed home run, the Dodgers defense blowing it for them late in that game, and the Dodgers defense blew it for them early in the game. What was yesterday? Yesterday was Tuesday. So the Dodgers defense blew. Yeah, I'm like trying to remember. I'm like, was it Saturday? No, I don't think
it feels like a long week. I know. Yeah. Trust me, I'm there.
It feels like a long week. So, yeah, Tuesday's game, the Dodgers defense really struggled for them, and I want to talk about that. But I first want to highlight the D-backs defense, because I know we're probably going to talk about the Dodgers defense and Gavin Lux and everything. But the D-backs defense turned a season-high 5 double plays. Dalton Varsho is making crazy plays in the outfield. Trey Turner was caught stealing. Chris Taylor got doubled up on the bases. The D-backs defense was basically doing everything in that game, and no double play was bigger than that one in the eighth inning, because we already talked about Ian Kennedy in the first segment. He gave up that run. He tried to blow the game today, and he tried to blow the game Tuesday as well. He's been a man possessed the last 2 days trying to blow games for the D-backs, and Brent Strom did not allow him to do that in the eighth inning on Tuesday, because he gave him the pep talk before he allowed the damage, was able to induce the ground ball. And looking at this Dodgers lineup, like, I'm surprised they weren't able to, you know, really come through with any of these scoring opportunities, because I felt like they were able to put men on the bases. They were able to get to Zach Davies early, but throughout the night, the D-backs did a good job of just limiting the damage and not, you know, not letting the Dodgers put any big runs on the scorecard.
Yeah, they ended up hitting into 5 double plays, 4 of the ground ball variety. One, Chris Taylor completely misreading a ball that he thought was going to land in for a hit, ended up getting doubled up at second base by Peralta after catching a line drive. So, yeah, it was just one of those nights where you couldn't get the hit. And you go back and you look at some of those ground balls on the double plays, and, you know, two or three of them were hit pretty hard, you know, over 95 miles an hour, whatever. You know, they're hit hard regardless of where they're at. And then just, you know, a little bit of bad luck in terms of the playing at that stadium. The Dodgers Had two balls hit over 400 feet that at their stadium would have been home runs, but in Arizona, don't quite reach it over there. And then I think Chris Taylor hit one, I think 405 feet in Wednesday's game that, you know, would have been out at anywhere at Dodger Stadium. So just one of those things where it ended up not being it. But, you know, props to the Diamondbacks. They allowed all those runners, but they turned all those double plays. And as we saw from the Dodgers defense, it's not that easy to turn those plays sometimes.
Yeah, because let's talk about that, because I think this game did swing in that third inning because Zach Davies got off to that start. I was like, I don't know how long he's going to last tonight. You said, you know, in segment number one that he's been a historic, maybe not Dodger killer, but has fared well against the Dodgers. And I wasn't sure he was going to do that yesterday, but he actually like stood up after the first inning. He wasn't terrible. He did allow a runner every inning after the first inning, but at least he didn't allow any earned runs. A big part of that, like we said, was the defense turning double plays and picking people off and doing all those things. But Tony Gonsolin, I'm sure he would have liked a little bit of help because he did get himself in a little bit of a jam. That was partly his own fault. He got second and third. I think a wild pitch moved everyone up. So that is on Tony Gonsolin. But he was looking for, you know, a strikeout, a ground out, something, an out that wouldn't allow any of the runners to score, basically. And he kind of got that with that Dalton Varsho dribbler. Looked like Perdomo was going to stay at third. And then you got Gavin Lux just throwing it over the first baseman's head. Like, what is he doing over there at second base?
Yeah, man. Like I said, that he up to that point, he hadn't really made a throw that bad so far this season. His throws aren't always the best, but I think it's one of those where he might have just been thinking a little bit too much, and then it carried over into Wednesday's game, unfortunately. Hopefully it doesn't carry over more. But yeah, I mean, Tony Gonsolin's a guy who lives on the edge like that. I mean, he's had the low ERA over the last two, three seasons. But his whip and FIP have always been higher, you know, higher than normal. So he's a guy that's kind of always gotten those double play ground balls, or gotten, you know, lucky or whatever the case is, and, you know, got himself into trouble with walks, and then, you know, end up with a wild pitch and everything else. So, you know, it may be one of those times where it just caught up to him yesterday. Unfortunately, it came at the hand of an error, but, you know, we don't know exactly what would happen after those runs might have still scored. But, you know, Gavin Lux didn't make it any easier, obviously.
Yeah, you think Gavin Lux is going to stay as an everyday player on this team? Like, what's his role in his future with this D-back squad currently?
Yeah, I mean, Lux, the reason they traded Pollock was to get Lux, you know, normal at-bats every day. He's played left field. He's played second base. He'll continue to, you know, go back and forth between there. I don't think, you know, the Dodgers are in a position, obviously it's hard to say this, but, you know, last year they 106 games, didn't win the division, still made the playoffs. But I think the Dodgers know at this point they're in a position to where they can kind of let Gavin Lux grow a little bit and keep him, you know, not necessarily bench him the next day or put him in back in left field. I think they'll put him back out there at second base on Friday, unless they're facing a tough lefty or something, and, you know, he'll get right back to it. But yeah, I think it was just one of those things where, you know, it had a bad day, it snowballed, and now we're talking about this again with him, which is what we've talked about before. But, you know, it's something that's happened, and it's something that's real, so he can't avoid it. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's still in the Dodgers starting nine for the most part, and he's one of those top nine guys. And then, you know, they're just going to have to live with some of this stuff sometimes.
Entering the bottom of the eighth inning after that big double play by the D-backs in the eighth, in the top of the eighth, what was your confidence level? What were your emotions heading into the bottom of the eighth? Where were you on the Dodgers' potential chance of winning that game? Because as a D-backs fan, I felt like the longer we kept it tied and if we could get to extra innings, our chances of winning that game was going to increase, just because I think you have an inherent advantage with the extra runner on second rule as the home team. I just think that, you know, has a little built-in advantage for the home team. So how did you feel as a Dodgers fan? Because you're coming off that game one, the Walker Buehler complete game shutout, which we haven't even talked about. I mean, he just dominated the D-backs in the first game of the series. So you're tied 1-1 basically the whole game with the D-backs yesterday, or 3-3, whatever the tie was. And I don't know, what was your emotions heading into that eighth inning? Did you feel like the Dodgers still had control of the game? They just kept letting moments pass by? Like, what were your emotions?
I mean, Walker Buehler, complete game shutout. You know, the Diamondbacks scored with the aid of an error. To that point, they hadn't shown too much offensively. Yeah. That was that scary, especially, you know, the Dodgers didn't use any relievers on Monday, so they had the full arsenal of relievers. You know, they're carrying 16 pitchers right now, so they got a full arsenal of guys ready to go. And, you know, Gradall's a guy who's been really good so far this season, and he just happened to leave a pitch up to David Peralta, who also – seems to get a lot of licks against the Dodgers and not so much against everyone else. But, you know, that's just what happens sometimes. And I do think that, you know, I don't know if I would have gone to Grader on that position. The Dodgers are missing Blake Treinen right now, who might have been in that position if that was the case. He's kind of been the guy that comes in against top of the order and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Dodgers didn't make the pitches and the D-backs did, or the Dodgers, you know, hit into the double plays and everything else. So, obviously, feeling confident with, you know, a full bullpen going and the Dodgers offense, all you really got to do is score one run. But like you said, once you get into that extra inning territory, when if they would have got to that point, then it's kind of like, you know, it's a fair game at that point. It's not really, it doesn't matter how good your lineup is, no. Because you can just get, you know, one strikeout, one fly ball, and one ground out, and, you know, you don't score, and then the other team can do a bunt and a flat sack fly, and the game's over. So we saw that with against the Padres the other night, where, you know, Trey Turner tied the game late, and then the Dodgers ended up going extras, and then they lost in the first inning of extras. So it just, you know, it was like that. You know, obviously I didn't expect to lose 2 out of 3 of the D-backs. I didn't expect them to get shut down. Even with, you know, Davies and Gallen kind of being the guys, the Dodgers have been able to, at least, even if they don't hit most of these pitchers, they're able to get them out in the fifth, sixth inning, get into that bullpen, and that's where they really go to work. I mean, they scored the most runs this year in the eighth inning, but it just didn't happen this time.
Yeah, the D-backs basically did all their damage in the eighth inning this series, which is kind of funny. Basically, all their runs came the eighth inning the last two games. I did like how easily the Dodgers went down in the ninth inning with Mark Melancon on the mound. Like you said, he hasn't blown a save yet to the Dodgers in his whole career, and he only needed 7 pitches, 6 strikes to get out on Tuesday's game. So thank you, Mark Melancon, because it was very, you know, I watch a lot of basketball events, and it was like the Boston Celtics against the Brooklyn Nets in Game 4. Like, the Nets just kind of laid down to the Boston Celtics in that Game 4. The Dodgers kind of did the same against the D-backs in that ninth inning, because after that David Peralta home run, it felt like the game ended in like 5 minutes. Like, I blinked and the game was over because that ninth inning went by so fast. Like, were you surprised there was not more fight by the Dodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about Mark Melancon. I mean, even he's had a couple years where he struggled and then, you know, found it again with the Giants, who ended up going to the Padres, now with the D-backs. And for whatever reason, I think it's one of those where, you know, you look at his stuff and you're like, this stuff's okay, but it's not like amazing. But I think he pitches enough around the edges that, you know, the Dodgers are for the most part a team that are very patient, you know, draw walks, take those pitches on the edges. But for a guy like Melancon, not throwing super hard, living around the edges, it's very enticing as a hitter to swing the bat. And, you know, that's what we saw. We saw him swing the bat pretty early and not make any hard contact. So, for whatever reason, Mark Melancon has done very good against the Dodgers. And hopefully the rest of the year, you know, there won't even be safe situations in these games with the Diamondbacks. But I always said hopefully there won't be. But realistically, it looks like there might be.
You know what? I think I'm going to have to place a bet on the Diamondbacks to finish with more wins than the Dodgers, or at least beat them in the head-to-head series for the rest of the year. The best place to place bets is betonline.net, because it's your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and actions. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, now we're wrapping up with Vincent Patio of Locked On Dodgers here. And I just want to get a couple of Dodgers questions in, you know, just a couple teasers for my Diamondbacks fans. I want to ask you about Cody Bellinger, because, of course, he's been much maligned entering the season. He was terrible last year. I mean, this was a guy who was an MVP, all-star candidate, and then just completely fell off a cliff last season. So, entering this season, much maligned, like I said, he's already won the NL Player of the Week. I just want to ask you, how do you think he's looked so far to start this season?
Yeah, very surprising, especially, you know, it's hard to say, read too much into spring training, just because, you know, you don't know what guys are exactly working on at the plate or whatever else. But for a guy like him who struck out over half his at-bats in spring training, and he's not a guy that's trying any, I mean, he's trying stuff out, but he's not a guy that's, you know, trying to like hit the ball the other way more or something like that. He's a guy that's trying to get on base and trying to hit, and he looked really bad the first week, and then he started barreling some baseballs. He started hitting some balls hard. He started, you know, hitting a couple over the wall, and even in this D-back series, he didn't quite get the hits that, you know, we already been accustomed to the first couple weeks of the season. But he hit the ball hard a few times. He hit that one liner that Pavin Smith tracked down in right field. He hit, I think, the one double play he hit into. The ball was hit relatively hard. So, you know, he's starting to see the ball better, make better contact. And it's hard to get too excited because, you know, this is a guy that has had a lot of peaks and valleys so far in the short career. I mean, he went from, you know, rookie of the year to a down year in 2018 to MVP in 2019. And to not that good in 2020 and one of the worst players in 2021. And, you know, not, you don't know what to make of it. But the fact that he's hitting the ball hard, the fact that he's, you know, hitting off-speed pitches as well as fastballs is still pretty good. But as we saw, I think late in that game on Wednesday, you can still beat him with the well-placed fastball on the inside upper half. So that's something that's probably always going to be there. But as long as he can hit mistakes and hit the off-speed pitches, then he's a guy that is going to contribute. And, you know, the best part about it with this Dodger team realistically is that he doesn't need to be an MVP candidate anymore. He just needs to be a serviceable hitter with Golden Glove defense in center field. And that's what he still has, the defense, and now he's starting to hit a little bit. So I'm cool with it.
But how much stock do you still have in Cody Bellinger? How much do you still believe he can get to those peaks that we saw and stay away from those valleys? Because we've seen this is a talented guy, but there's a, you know, you've already said it. Peaks and valleys is the best way to describe him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll be an MVP candidate again, at least not in the next couple years, or maybe not this season. But I think he's a guy that can carry an offense for a week or two at a time when he gets hot. And it's one of those where, you know, you look at Freddie Freeman and, you know, without just with the eye test with Freddie Freeman, you feel like he's a guy that doesn't slump very often. He's a 300 hitter that just is very consistent, you know, hits the ball the other way and everything else. With Bellinger, he's a guy that, you know, at best, maybe a 280 hitter, or whatever, but he's a guy that's going to hit like 400 for 2 weeks. And then he's going to hit like 100 for 2 weeks. And he's going to be up and down like that. So I think he's a guy that can still have, you know, be a borderline all-star. I don't know if he'll ever get back to that MVP season. But, you know, a lot of it's in his head mentally. You know, he worked through a lot of things. And, you know, you don't want to put too many excuses on him because last year, you know, he was hurt coming into – or he got hurt in the postseason, you know, had the shoulder surgery, then got hurt in the first week of the season and then everything else. And, you know, he contributed to the Dodgers pretty well in the postseason, had the game-winning hit against the Giants to win that series, had a big home run late in the game against the Braves. So he's still able to help out. But this year, yeah, I think he borderline all-star, not too much stock. And it's kind of in a weird spot now because, you know, the Dodgers is going to come up on free agency soon. And it's like, what do you do with a guy like that? You don't have no idea what he's going to give you year in and year out.
What a good segue to my next question, Vince, because I want to know, what do you think his long-term future is with the Dodgers? Is it a short-term prove-it deal? Or are you ready to lock him up for the next 8 years? Or are you like, maybe it's better to trade him and see what we could get back for him on the open market?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's a Boris guy, so he's definitely a guy.
He wants that.
Yeah, he's going to try to get that money. And, you know, for for the Dodgers, you know, he's – at this point, not a necessity. He's a luxury, and we've seen the Dodgers let luxuries walk in the past. Kike Hernandez, you know, Jock Peterson, even Corey Seager to a certain extent. I mean, he's a little bit above a luxury, but it wasn't quite the necessity just because they had Trey Turner waiting to play shortstop.
Trey Turner there just casually. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of what he wants. You know, if he thinks he can, if he wants to bet on himself and do a short-term deal, then I think the Dodgers obviously would go for that. They're always offering short-term deals to guys. But if he's a guy that's going to want a longer deal for big money, first of all, I don't know if he'll get it anywhere else. I don't know if there's teams out there willing to spend like that on a guy who you don't know exactly what you're going to get. But, you know, I think it might be one of those where he's just comfortable with the Dodgers. He knows what they're going to get. And, you know, maybe he'll give them a slight discount. I mean, he's already up there in arbitration. I mean, he's making $17 million this year, and that's coming off he was one of the worst offensive players in baseball last year. But that was just because of how good he was his first few years that he got his arbitration number up there. So, you know, it's a matter of, is he even going to be worth, you know, that much in the coming years? I don't know. But if he keeps hitting like he is now, then, you know, he's going to put himself in a spot to, you know, maybe be a $100 million guy.
Yeah, I want to talk about Trey Turner and that deal. I don't think we have enough time to discuss it because it's one of the few things that trigger me very quickly in this world, that when I go back and look at that trade that the Dodgers pulled over, the fleece that the Dodgers pulled over the Washington Nationals, it really gets my blood boiling because of how good Trey Turner is and the fact that he was like a freaking throw-in in that deal. But I want to ask you one final question, Vince, before we wrap up today. A very simple but kind of a fun question. Just because this Dodgers lineup is so loaded, who do you think their best offensive player is?
Yeah, you know, it's hard not to fall in love with Freddie Freeman just because, you know, Trey Turner has the numbers, and but even I've talked about this, and maybe we're just spoiled as Dodger fans, but, you know, ever since Trey Turner came over, you look at the numbers and they're really good, but it's also like, I don't know, I feel like I had Trey Turner so high on the pedestal that it hasn't, he hasn't wowed me yet.
Wow.
But I mean, but yeah, but exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I look at the numbers, I look at the numbers and you're like, okay, yeah, I should be wowed. But I don't know if it's because he hasn't quite shown the power since he came over to the Dodgers. You know, he had decent home run numbers or pretty good home run numbers last year at the Nationals. Then when he came over, didn't quite bring that power over. Hasn't, you know, really translated yet, but I think Freddie Freeman is the best offensive player right now. But, you know, is that going to be the case throughout the whole year? I don't think so. I think Mookie Betts has the highest ceiling in terms of best offensive player just because he brings power and speed. And, you know, he's done it before and he's had seasons better than Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner and Cody Bellinger, you know, before. But I think Freddie Freeman, I think he's just impressed me so far this year. He consistently hits the ball hard, hits the ball the other way. He can hit for power, and he's a guy that, you know, doesn't seem to slump. And as well, from what we've seen so far this season, Mookie hasn't been that great, but anytime he gets on base, he's scoring. I mean, he's one of the league leaders in runs scored, and he's not even hitting, I think, 250 yet. So, you know, it's a matter of just he's sitting behind those guys, and those guys are waiting to hit him in.
Yeah, I think Mookie has a high ceiling, but he's just been so inconsistent with the Dodgers. I think I might lean Trey Turner, but I know he's had some playoff struggles. Freddie Freeman kind of has the whole package, so it really depends on what your taste is, because Trey Turner has been able to tap into the power a little bit more. Now that he's like a 25 home run guy, that's a big deal for his game, because when he's stealing 50 bags and getting you 25 home runs, that's huge for his offensive repertoire. I'm just looking at his stats here on Baseball Reference events during his time with the Dodgers. I think as a D-backs fan, I would be pretty wild if I had a guy batting 325 with 900 OPS. Like, you sound a little spoiled, man.
I'm telling you, I can't figure out why that. I think, like I said, I think I've had Trey Turner so high. Like, every time the Dodgers played the Nationals, they played him in two playoff series. They played him, you know, obviously regular season. And it's just like, man, that guy. And I think I don't know what it is. Like, he just hasn't had that moment yet. But, you know, you look even at this year, he's one of the. He's got up there in RBIs. He's been the Dodgers, you know, one of the main clutch guys. And with him, you know, offensively, that speed element adds – hits a lot of slow choppers, but those slow choppers always end up being singles because you're not going to throw them out. So, yeah, it's definitely a matter of just being spoiled. I honestly can't figure it out, and I'm sure Trey Turner is going to win me over by the end of the season.
Yeah, the D-backs currently have two players on their roster batting above 260. Haven Smith, who is a first baseman playing right field, and Seth Beer, who is a rookie who is so bad defensively, he can only play DH. So that's what the D-backs are working with. We'll graciously take Trey Turner off your hands if it's an abundant of riches over there in LA land, because I know they got a lot of talent. And Trey Turner, I mean, if I was the GM and I knew that guy was available, I would have been all over that deal, because it's insane that he was a throw into that deal for Max Scherzer. But Vince Amperio of Locked On Dodgers, thank you for hopping on today's pod. Where can the audio listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Vince Amperio, and you can find the podcast, Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Dodgers. So make sure to, you know, if you're ever getting over your D-backs fandom for a day, or you want something else to listen to, we're there every day, just like Millard is. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've never been to a Dodgers game. I definitely want to go out to one. I mean, I'm trying to go to, who knows, maybe LA this summer, maybe see a Dodgers game. That'd be pretty fun. I definitely want to go check out that stadium and crowd. I've been to the Staples Center, now the Crypto.com Arena, for the first time on my birthday last year. So that was a lot of fun. So hopefully I can make it out to a Dodgers game this summer as well. But Vince, thank you for hopping on today's pod, and I'll see you next time, sir. That's it for this edition of the Locked On D-backs podcast. Shout out to everyone who tuned into today's podcast. D-backs beat LA. Great series win over the LA Dodgers. Next up, we got to do it all again against the St. Louis Cardinals. Thank you for making Locked On D-backs your first listen every day. Go make your second listen of the day, Locked On MLB with my pal Sully Baseball. And of course, stay safe and stay healthy. Deuces!